On this Sunday night, immigration war. President Trump lashes out again at the federal judge who blocked his travel ban, saying he put our country in such peril, while the top Senate Republican voices disapproval. And more travelers seize the opening, finally making it to this country. Collision course, increasingly harsh rhetoric between Iran and the United States. Will a war of words turn into something worse? Tonight, we're in Iran with the view from there. Screen danger, a new warning about what all that screen time is doing to our eyes, especially in children, and the damage may be permanent. And game on, the pride of one small town in the Super Bowl, sending not one, but two players on opposing teams to the big game. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. We are just hours away from the next court filing in the fierce legal battle over President Trump's immigration order. Visa holders from those seven countries that would be affected by a ban are taking advantage of the latest court action passing through immigration checkpoints today. And President Trump again took to Twitter, criticizing the judge in Seattle who halted the policy late Friday and issuing a warning. Kelly O'Donnell starts us off from Florida, where the president is watching the Super Bowl tonight.
Today, homecomings and arrivals. Relief granted by a federal court and reinforced by welcome signs at international airports for travelers from seven mostly Muslim countries whose visas were reinstated. But today, President Trump doubled down. Just cannot believe a judge would put our country in such peril. If something happens, blame him and court system. People pouring in, bad. The president tweeted that he is using his authority over agencies that screen travelers. I have instructed Homeland Security to check people coming into our country very carefully. The courts are making the job very difficult. The vice president defended Mr. Trump's broadside against the courts.
The judge's actions in this case, making decisions about American foreign policy and national security, it's just very frustrating to the president, to our whole administration.
Today, one protest flew over the Super Bowl stadium in Houston. Part of the big game's coverage is a Fox interview taped Friday with President Trump. What he said about Vladimir Putin stunned even fellow Republicans.
Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though.
Putin's a killer. A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent? Do you think our country's so innocent?
I don't know of any government leaders that are killers.
Well, take a look at what we've done, too. We've made a lot of mistakes.
But Putin is suspected in the murders of political adversaries and journalists, a comparison rejected by prominent Republicans.
No, I don't think there's any equivalency between the way the Russians that conduct themselves and the way the United States does.
Ohio Governor John Kasich tweeted, there is no equivalence with the brutal regime of Vladimir Putin. Wyoming Congresswoman Liz Cheney called the president's suggestion deeply troubling and wrong.
The comments coming from top Senate Republican Mitch McConnell stand out because he's been reluctant to comment on every Trump controversy. And when it comes to federal judges, it is Mitch McConnell who will carry the load trying to confirm President Trump's first Supreme Court nominee. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell down in Florida. Kelly, thank you. Let's get the latest now on where things stand in the legal battle over President Trump's executive order on immigration from our justice correspondent, Pete Williams. So, Pete, what is next?
Well, for now, the travel restrictions remain on hold because of the Seattle judge's order Friday. That's the lawsuit brought by two states, Washington and Minnesota. Just after midnight Saturday, the Justice Department asked a federal appeals court on the West Coast to lift the judge's order. The government said Congress gave the president, not the courts, the authority to control the borders. But the appeals court declined to rule immediately and instead asked the states and the government to submit more legal briefs. The two states have until 4 a.m. Eastern time to file. Then the Justice Department has until Monday evening at 6 Eastern to file. So nothing's going to change for at least another day. And in the meantime, the Trump executive order remains on hold, Kate.
And what are the chances then that this ends up before the Supreme Court?
Pretty good, I'd say. Whichever side loses in the appeals court can ask for an emergency order from the U.S. Supreme Court. The justices would, I'm sure, act quickly, but it could take another day or so, Kate.
All right, Pete Williams, thanks so much. For one family from Iraq, all the uncertainty for them went away today. Their journey finally ended as they touched down in the United States. We first started following them, you may remember, last week in Iraq. Morgan Radford tonight on their arrival here.
Excitement and relief at New York's JFK Airport. Fuad Sharif and his family finally in the United States.
The embassy contacted me and they said, we are sorry and you are able to travel.
The journey here has been a long one.
Everything went very smoothly.
After working as a translator for the U.S. government during the Iraq War and waiting on a two-year approval process, Sharif finally received a visa for him and his family.
American government invited me, gave me visa, told me, come, you have helped us in the past.
A dream come true, seemingly shattered in an instant after President Trump's executive order temporarily banning travelers from seven mostly Muslim countries. NBC's Richard Engel was with them as they tried to figure out their next move.
What happened when you told everybody we're not going?
Wow, that was a terrible moment.
Sharif had already bought a flight, even packed his bags and sold his house. But during a layover in Cairo, a gate agent said he and his family could go no farther and would be sent back to Iraq.
This shocked me and I was surprised. Was there any more to investigate?
But his hopes were revived Thursday when the administration amended the order to allow Iraqi interpreters who served the U.S. government into the U.S. Sharif's odyssey began again. Goodbye to Iraq for a second time, more tears, another last hug. Now they have just one more flight to go, to Nashville, their new home. This one, they hope, will be their last. Morgan Radford, NBC News, New York.
President Trump said in tonight's Super Bowl interview that Iran has what he called total disregard for the United States. And he called that country the number one terrorist state. It's the latest round in what's become an increasingly hostile back and forth. We get more from NBC's Ali Arouzi inside Iran.
2 weeks into the job and President Trump placed Iran in his crosshairs. One of seven countries on the visa ban. Put on notice for a provocative ballistic missile test. Slapped with new sanctions, and then the president tweeting, Iran is playing with fire. They don't appreciate how kind President Obama was to them. Not me. Tehran is literally firing back. In a show of defiance this weekend, the Revolutionary Guard conducted military exercises, testing indigenous missile systems and radars. As a senior commander said, Iran's roaring missiles will rain down on the enemy if attacked. President Rouhani called Mr. Trump a political novice with a lot to learn about the world. The defense minister promised more missile tests would come.
Both sides, the American leadership and the Iranian leadership, are playing with fire. There's a real danger that the war of words between Washington and Tehran could easily escalate into a shooting war.
Contrary to popular opinion in the West, many regular Iranians are pro-American. But there seems to be a shift in attitude. That goodwill now shrinking.
You know, the governments in Iran tried for four decades to establish a nationwide hatred for the United States, and they failed. But Mr. Trump managed that in 10 days.
While this musician we spoke to in a central Tehran cafe was angry with America.
We, the Iranians, we see this belligerence and warmongering ideas from America. Who on earth has appointed America police of the world?
The president's national security advisor, secretary of defense, and director of the CIA all believe Iran is a destabilizing threat and the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism. That makes people here anxious. People who like America and have dismissed past threats as bluster now worry about an escalation beyond just words. Ali Arouzi, NBC News, Tehran.
Back here in this country, no surprise to a lot of parents. It is the height of the flu season, and we are in the middle of a new surge. The CDC says flu activity is higher this year than last and considerably more widespread within each state. We get more tonight from Steve Patterson.
From Florida to Washington State, Families across the country are down for the count.
I think it's bubblegum. It'll make me feel better.
Near Seattle, mom Rika Regis is running a living room infirmary. Her family of six, all sick with the flu.
We haven't had been hit quite like this in, I can't even remember when.
Have you seen a lot of people down there coughing?
Yeah.
In Washington state alone, 148 people have died from the flu this season, putting the state on track for its worst flu season in 7 years. And there's cause for concern nationwide. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 40 states are reporting widespread flu activity, with more than 30,000 reported cases of influenza in the U.S. So far this season, 15 children have died, 7 in just 1 week.
I think people forget that influenza kills tens of thousands of Americans each year.
It's why doctors across the country are pushing the importance of immunization.
The most important thing that people can do to prevent them from getting influenza is to get vaccinated.
She was like a ray of sunshine.
Rebecca Hendricks works with a group called Families Fighting Flu after the illness claimed her 5-year-old daughter, Scarlett, 2 years ago.
I didn't know, so I treated it like a common cold. And when I took her to the hospital, she went straight to ICU and died 4 hours later.
A heartbreaking lesson she shares in hopes of saving precious lives as flu season hits its peak. Steve Patterson, NBC News.
Well, you might have heard there's a big game going on in Houston right now. After 2 weeks of hype, Super Bowl 51 between the New England Patriots and Atlanta Falcons is underway. It's also a super test for law enforcement with the chance of political protests on top of keeping everyone safe at a global spectacle. Ron Mott is at the game for us and has our report.
America's unofficial holiday, the Super Bowl. A great escape for loyal fans of the Falcons and Patriots.
We are rising up. This is our year.
Who's going to win?
Oh, definitely New England. Bringing home number 5 today.
But keeping them safe is no vacation for law enforcement. With Blackhawks monitoring high above, thousands of boots and paws on the ground, local, state, and federal agencies have teamed up to tackle trouble.
Donald Trump has got to go!
2 miles away, several hundred march toward the stadium in protest over politics and the president.
This is our opportunity to have people know and the administration know how America really feels.
As Vice President Mike Pence arrived in Houston.
Pretty big undertaking to safeguard the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But we're ready. We're prepared. I'm confident that we'll be successful.
We have built in into our plans, protest activity like this. So we plan for it, prepare for it, and we've expected it.
The big showdown is on the field. The NFL's top two quarterbacks, Tom Brady for New England, going after his 5th Super Bowl ring, and Matt Ryan for Atlanta. While many around the country are rooting for the underdog Falcons.
Falcon Nation in the house.
Patriots fans are looking for sweet revenge for Deflategate.
It's going to be bittersweet when he hands over that Lombardi trophy. That's all I'm going to say. It'll be bittersweet.
Super Bowl halftime shows have generated controversial headlines from time to time, including Beyonce just last year. Tonight's performance by provocative pop star Lady Gaga is reportedly going to be on a 5-second delay tonight, just in case. Kate?
Okay, Ron Mott, thanks so much. Still ahead tonight, the new health danger now being reported from all that time we spend in front of our screens, especially kids. Also, the spontaneous show of unity on a subway, passengers standing up to hate. Let's face it, we're all spending a lot more time staring at screens, smartphones, computers, tablets, and for kids addicted to their phones, there's a new danger that doctors are concerned about. Now, all that screen time is prematurely aging their eyes, and the damage could be permanent. Our medical correspondent, Dr. John Torres, explains.
We've been snapchatting for 239 days in a row.
239 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
13-year-old Eva Weber says she's on her smartphone at least 8 hours a day, chatting with friends, taking photos, even using it for homework.
If I'm bored, I'll go on my phone and just, like, look up things to do when you're bored.
She usually carries her phone charger with her because she's on her phone so much that we have to stop and charge phones.
But Eva is now trying to hang up on her phone habit. Her eyes have become so irritated, she has trouble with her vision.
Last week, she took a test, and she openly said to me, by the end of the 3 hours, my eyes were so tired that I just didn't even care if I was getting the answers wrong.
So come on in, chin on the bottom there.
Eva is diagnosed with a condition typically found in aging adults, not teenagers, dry eye syndrome, when tears don't provide enough moisture.
This is actually Eva's eye between blinks.
So she has dry eye everywhere.
This is like an aging eye. So you see this commonly in people who are in their 50s and 60s, but now in children who are using their smartphones a lot, we're seeing this more and more.
How can a smartphone dry out the eye? Staring at screens makes you blink less, so tears evaporate faster, and tears are key to good eye health.
I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, is that tears don't do very much except for keep the eye moist. The tear level on the eye is the most important thing for helping a patient see the best that they can.
Let's go back over to this eye here.
Ophthalmologist Dr. Ralph Chu has been seeing so many dry eye cases lately, he now recommends the 20-20-20 rule. Every 20 minutes, stare at something 20 feet away for 20 seconds. That, along with eye drops, has helped Eva Weber get some relief. Though, like most teens, she still can't put her phone down for too long.
Say
A smarter way to keep eyes young and healthy. Dr. John Torres, NBC News, New Market, Minnesota.
Maybe just put the phone down every once in a while. When we come back, do border walls work? As this country struggles with the idea, we'll go to one country that has embraced them. It was a spontaneous display of solidarity against hate, offensive graffiti here in New York this weekend when passengers on a subway noticed anti-Semitic messages and Nazi symbols scrawled all over their subway car. They came together in defiance. People took out their hand sanitizers and tissues and started wiping off the hateful messages, one passenger recording it all on his cell phone. In that interview tonight, the president talked about the dangers of drug cartels operating in Mexico. One of the things he sees as part of the solution is a border wall. And in making that argument, the president often cites the experience of Israel. There, walls have become a way of life, for better or worse, depending on who you ask. Matt Bradley takes a look behind Israel's walls.
The wall will be successful. And if you think walls don't work, all you have to do is ask Israel.
And Israel would know. Since 2002, America's strongest Mideast ally built hundreds of miles of barriers with the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, Syria, Egypt, and they're planning one with Jordan, turning Israel into something like a walled fortress.
Definitely the security barrier, the fences, the wall components, they all work in tandem in order to prevent terrorist attacks against Israel.
Trump's wall with Mexico would be different from Israel's, but they would share many challenges. Suicide attacks in Israel have dropped since Israelis built the barrier separating them from the mostly Palestinian West Bank. But like all walls, there are two sides. Palestinians say the decline in suicide attacks wasn't about the barrier, but their own political decisions.
This used to be a very rich area, economically very prosper, and now it has been totally devastated.
They say it makes their lives miserable and steals land from their future state.
I would invite Donald Trump to come to see how the world works. We are living in the 21st century. We are not living in the Middle Ages to put cages and walls around the people.
For thousands of Palestinians every day, getting across it is as crude and dangerous as climbing a rope and getting through a hole. Sadat Gharib's house is surrounded by the barrier and hemmed in by Israeli settlers. If Trump builds a wall, Mexicans will suffer just like Palestinians, he said. But Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, has praised Trump's wall idea, comparing it to the one dividing Israel from Egypt. It keeps out African immigrants, desperate for work. Many Israelis say all the barriers keep them safe.
If we didn't have this fence between us and other borders, we would lose lives.
But on the other side, Palestinians say the burden has fallen mostly on them. Matt Bradley, NBC News in the West Bank.
Up next, a small town in Georgia and its deep connection to tonight's Super Bowl. Finally tonight, the Super Bowl is all about pride, right? Pride in making it to one of the ultimate showdowns in sports. And for one Georgia town, pride in knowing that not one, but two of its former high school athletes are out on the field tonight in Houston. Our Jacob Rascone went back to where it all began.
In the small town of Carrollton, Georgia, football is king. And the Harris family is royalty.
My dad played football here. My brother, John's brother.
John and Lori's son, Josh, fell in love with the game in preschool.
He went to every Trojan football game on Friday nights from the time he's been 4 years old to the time he graduated as a senior.
The Carrollton High long snapper went on to star at Auburn and now for the Atlanta Falcons.
the sacrifices he made, the commitment. That's what makes us most proud. Now, the Super Bowl puts it all on steroids for us.
But the Falcons aren't the only Super Bowl team with a hometown hero.
This is so exciting!
While we were filming a spontaneous reunion with the Jones family, also royalty around here. Sharon and Stacy are the parents of Jonathan Jones.
He's been playing since he was four and haven't stopped.
Also a Carrollton High football star, who also played for Auburn and now plays for the New England Patriots.
What are the odds? You know, you have two hometown kids, you know, playing in the Super Bowl, you know, on the opposite side. It's amazing.
Carrollton High principal David Brooks coached them both.
Be good people. They were good people in the classroom, on the field, whatever they did. And just to see them reach this goal, reach this dream, it's very exciting to me.
They went to high school together, so that makes us family. They went to the same college, so that makes us family, you know, so.
Now they're on opposite teams. That makes us enemies.
That make them competing because they're competitors, you know.
Bottom line is both families know no matter who loses the game, Carrollton wins. Jacob Rascone, NBC News, Carrollton, Georgia.
Competitors, not enemies. And that is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be back in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York, and I'll see you tomorrow on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.